Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Anthony Curtis, publisher of the Huntington Press and the Las Vegas Advisor. Anthony Curtis, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
It seems like I was just here yesterday.
He actually was just here yesterday. Richard, how come we made Anthony come back 2 days in a row?
We had so much fun doing this show yesterday that we thought we'd come back and do it again. No, actually, we had a technical problem with a bad cable, and the show was not usable, so we're going to give it a second try.
We did an entire show. It went over an hour. We were brilliant and funny and witty, and I just can't wait to see what we aren't today.
Uh-huh. Now, this actually is a good transition point, because we were thinking about changing from Tuesday to Thursday anyway.
So, and now we are.
And now we are, although not for entirely the right reason.
But well, no, I mean, we're changing to Thursday, I mean, mainly so that, well, let's talk about gamblingwithanedge.com, and that'll explain.
Yes, they're all related. Okay, Anthony, gamblingwithanedge.com, what is it and how are you involved?
Gamblingwithanedge.com is a new blog that we are putting up, that we have put up at lasvegasadvisor.com. It's actually, there's a duality to it. The first part of it is essentially a place for this radio show to have a home on the web. I've listened to the show for a long time. I've really enjoyed the show. I think you guys have the best guests in the business. And I've seen discussions of the show in various places on the web. You know, I've seen it on VP Free. I've seen it just in various other forums. But they're never all in one place. And I've thought about it for a while, and I thought, man, wouldn't it be cool if all the people who listen had a place to go where they could talk with one another and perhaps actually give their comments, give their ideas about the show, have their questions answered once in a while. And so we talked about it here, and we said, well, why don't we put up a blog where people can actually do that, and it'll be the home of the radio show on the net. We said, okay, what would we call it? Well, we'd like to call it Gambling with an Edge. That would make sense. And we went searching for the gamblingwithanedge.com domain name, and lo and behold, it was taken.
And who had it?
There was this guy named Richard Munchkin.
I've heard of him.
So, and I have to thank a listener, one of our listeners, David S., we'll call him, and he had snapped it up a couple of years ago and then said to me, hey, you know, your domain was available, so I grabbed it. Do you want it? And I said, yeah, please, and thank you.
And that's a cool guy, because he wasn't squatting. He was protecting, you know?
He was
protecting it for you. So, all right, so I called Richard, and I said, here's our idea. And Richard called Bob, and we all got together, and I said, you know, how about we do this, and we can use Gambling with an Edge? And so that's what we did. Now, I also felt that there needed to be more, because what can we do with a radio show? Well, we can put up archives. We can have a place where people can ask questions and put up comments. We can put up who's coming next, that sort of thing. But I wanted there to be more. Well, we've been running a blog by James Grosjean called Beyond Numbers, and that blog has been doing quite well. It's well visited, but all by itself, it's probably not enough either. So we made a second part of Gambling with an Edge that we at this time we call it a super blog, which sounds a little bit pretentious. But the reason we call it that is not because we think it's the greatest blog in the world, but because we put together a bunch of bloggers. So rather than a regular blog, we've got a super blog.
That means it comes with French fries and a Coke, doesn't it?
Yeah. If you wanted to. But, I mean, along with James Grosjean, we transitioned Grosjean's blog to gamblingwithanedge.com. We've got your articles that usually come out on Tuesdays. That goes up there, and now you can comment directly to the articles. We transitioned Richard Munchkin's blog over, and...
Yeah, I haven't been writing much, but when I do write, I will be putting it here. And eventually, I will just redirect richardmunchkin.com to come here automatically.
So. Right. Plus your archives, which is good. There's a bunch of really good things in there about old, you know, about books that came out that are still valid and good for.
Oh yeah, and I have interviews. What was going to be a second Gambling Wizards? I was going to call Blackjack Wizards, and I have 6-8 interviews with various blackjack players that are.
Right.
That are there. So
okay, there's a guy named Bill Ordine. He wrote our book on daily fantasy sports, Fantasy Sports Real Money. Bill is on top of the scene, and DFS is just about anybody I know. So Bill's already put up three or four posts, and he'll be blogging on Daily Fantasy Sports. Blair Rodman right now is writing about the World Series of Poker. Blair is the author of Kill Phil, very connected in the poker world. Frank B., who was our sports guy at LVA Sports. Frank was my partner when we took second in the Nugget last year, in the Nugget contest. And I can tell you, Frank did 98% of the work there. So, you know, we've got...
Those are good partners to have.
Yeah, those are the best partners to have. They're also good bloggers. These guys can all write, but the problem is with the great gamblers that also know how to write, they only write sometimes, and they really can't carry off a blog by themselves. So the idea was, let's put them all into one, and then they can blog at their leisure, and it's not going to go for days and weeks without anything in there. And hopefully we'll get a crowd and people will start coming back, and then you can use the RSS feeds and you can only read the ones that you want, or you can read everybody. And so far, so good. One other point I would like to make is that this particular, and those aren't the only ones, too, let me add. They aren't the only ones. We're working on some others right now as well, several others, in fact. But we had expected, we had planned to do this blog probably within a couple of months. And what happened was Grosjean, I think we're going to talk about a little bit today, James Grosjean had an article done about him where he was the subject in a feature in New York Times Magazine. In that feature, his Beyond Numbers blog was mentioned, and we wanted to leverage that. So we rushed this thing to market, and we opened it up. So anyone who goes to gamblingwithanedge.com and takes a look at it, it's in beta right now. And they'll see changes over the next few days and weeks as we, you know, kind of polish it up.
So, Richard, how does that relate to Tuesday and Thursday?
Your weekly article has been coming out on Tuesdays for years and years and years.
Yes.
And rather than what we'd like to do is have things coming out on as many different days as possible. So rather than move your weekly article, we decided to move the show. And so hopefully if I write a blog post, I probably will post it not on a Tuesday or a Thursday, but some other day of the week. And same with, you know, James's posts or whoever, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. You know, the other thing I thought about with commentary or comments from the listeners is how do you really comment on a podcast or a radio show? It's a little bit difficult. You know, you're listening to it, you've got to go somewhere, you've got to do something. Now they're going to know exactly where to go. That's the idea, is that wherever they get their feed from and they listen to this show and they want to get on there and say, you know, just don't bring that Curtis guy back, you know, or whatever. Or, you know, he was brilliant and you guys are terrific or whatever. You know, they want to expand on something we've been talking about or get a dialogue up. They'll know exactly where to go. And because it's blog software, it has blog type of discussion, you know, features in it. And it's going to be very easy to follow and do.
Yeah, I should also say, if you get the show from iTunes or Stitcher or at YouTube, none of that will change. So if you're used to having the show delivered in that way, you don't have anything to worry about. But you may want to come look at the site anyway, either to comment or also I'm going to try to be better about letting people know ahead of time who the upcoming guest is going to be. And then if you want to send questions or whatever for that guest...
The whole idea behind it, and it's me, it was me butting in. It really was me butting in because you guys do a fine show, and I think that you're gaining a lot of traction. But I just felt it lacked community. I just felt the show needed some sort of a component of community. So that's what we're going to try here. If it works, it's great. If it doesn't work, then you know we won't continue with it. But we're going to give this a try for a while.
Yeah, another feature built in is like, next week, we're going to have a guy named Mitch that some of you have never heard of. And you go, well, who is it and why should I listen to it? Now, if there happen to be six comments on it, and I don't know that there will be, then you go, well, that does sound like something I want to listen to, or no, I'd rather go bowling, or whatever it is. But it can help you decide whether or not you want to listen to it.
And here's another thing we talked about between the three of us, and you guys can confirm. This is a better chance to get your ear. I mean, you guys also are going to treat this as the primary place to go. And, you know, I'm not going to obligate, I can't obligate you and say you're going to answer every single question that comes up.
And
that,
we won't.
Yeah, and you shouldn't, because that's not the way these things work. But you'll know, if you post a question or a comment in there, you'll know it's going to be seen by Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. And I can't say that necessarily for any place else for sure. Well, maybe VP Free. But, you know, I still, it's not going to be quite the same. Richard, I don't think you frequent VP Free.
No, I don't.
Very good. Let's move on. New York Times Magazine this last weekend published an article on Advantage players. First part was mainly about James Grosjean, although there was a significant part of it about Richard. And the second part we'll talk about a little bit later. So this was an article describing James and Richard playing card craps, which is a type of craps where they deal cards. And James discovered an edge, or James and Richard together. And so they were playing. Okay. And they were playing it. And Michael Kaplan watched them and wrote an article about it. Now, in this article, it gives up a few more things than I thought Richard and James wouldn't normally want to give up. But how did it come about in the first place, Richard?
Well, actually, Anthony knows more about how this all started than I do. So why don't you start?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a... There are several stories to this, and there's a little bit of a backstory. This goes way back, more than a year ago, probably close to... over 2 years ago. And Michael Kaplan, who is a very, very fine gambling writer, he's a columnist for Cigar Aficionado, writes for a lot of other mainstream magazines. For my money, I would put him as the top gambling writer to the masses, without question. And Michael had this great idea of dissecting a play, an advantage play maneuver, from beginning to end. And his feeling was that the epic person to get for this, the perfect person, would be James Grosjean.
That's parts I agree with totally.
Yes.
And originally it was going to be Don Johnson, or James and Don Johnson.
Yeah, well, that's what he wanted. But first he needed to get it started. And he and James had a little bit of a falling out. And I mean, not a big falling out, but they just weren't on the friendliest of terms. And so Michael Kaplan came to town doing some things, and I got together with him, and he said, "What do you think are the chances that I could get James Grosjean?" And I said, "Well, if he don't want to do it, he ain't going to do it." And that's pretty much the way it is. But I said, this guy doesn't really hold a grudge. And I said, you know, let me talk to him. So I did get in the middle of it, and I was able to get them talking, and certainly they started. But here's where it got funky is, you know, they were off to the races, and they did the play, and James showed them how it was done. And, you know, Richard will talk about how it went down. But in the middle of it, James got really sick.
Before the play ever
went before
off.
The play started. But I mean, there was all of it was the article was already under, you know, it was underway because they had met in Vegas. And James had told him what they were doing. James was showing how he simmed the whole thing, how he put together the play, you know, how he decided that it was going to work. So the article was already in process, and it was being written, and they were waiting for it at the Times. And Grosjean, some people know about this, others don't, but it's not a big secret. He got very, very sick. He got a...
life and death kind of sick.
Yeah. The name of it was...
Necrotizing fasciitis.
That was the name of the...
It's the flesh-eating bacteria, yeah.
Right. And it's it targeted one of his arms. And he was in a position to possibly lose a limb and possibly lose his life. He was very, very actually close to dying. A lot of people do die from this. And James got really, I mean, he's now come back from it. He's a strong guy. He's fit. You know, he's not particularly a partier of any sort. And, you know, he's the guy who takes care of himself, and that brought him through this thing. But it certainly set everything back. Now, in the middle of it, all this stuff is going on. This great article is about to be written. And the editors at the New York Times said, because they're just so nice in the media, they said, well, that's really a shame that he's sick, but we really don't want to wait. Bob, you wanted to add something to that?
No, I just can't imagine anybody in the media who isn't really nice.
I, for years, you know, when I used to do a lot of TV and all, I used to call them the ultimate brain suckers. Boy, they'd come in like vampires and suck your brain and leave you laying on the concrete if they could. But they didn't want to wait. And I'll tell you, Michael Kaplan fought for this like a madman. I mean, he fought tooth and nail to make this happen. And they did wait, and they put the play on, and then I guess Richard, you can...
Well, at one point, you came to me and asked me if I would take over.
That's right. That's what they want. What Michael suggested to them is that we would get somebody else to run the play. Although James had birthed it and it was his idea and he'd put it together, they would get somebody to run the play. So Kaplan called me and said, "Who do you think could run the play?" And I said Richard Munchkin, I thought, could run the play.
Yeah, and I said I would be willing if it was okay with James. But, yeah, fortunately it worked out that he recovered and we were able to go, and he was able to run the play. So
yeah.
So the article was pretty accurate. Yes, it revealed more than both of us would have liked. I mean, really, especially about the way in which we had an edge, where the edge came from. We would have liked to have seen that part of it left out. And the part about me not being able to read signals.
I thought that was kind of interesting. I thought maybe Alzheimer's creeping up faster than I thought about you. Yeah. I would think you'd be okay on that.
I think I can see a signal across a table. Yeah,
well, there's writer's license. Sometimes you want to make the thing sound a little better.
So I made the perfect BP because I'm tall and Chinese.
Well, in Oklahoma, that might work.
Well, actually, yeah, in Oklahoma, you know, I fit in pretty well. I think I actually was wearing an OU hat rather than a Mercedes hat. But again, there was license there.
Now, in it, you briefly called yourself Little Joe. How did that happen?
Well, I didn't call myself Little Joe. What happened was, you know, dealers, first of all, if you're betting a lot of money, they're immediately hustling you for tokes, even though I was losing substantially, right? So a guy asked me where I was from, and I just ignored him, a dealer. And then at one point he asked me, you know, "What's your name? What do I call you?" And the point was four, and in craps, hard four is Little Joe from Kokomo. But so it so happened I yelled Little Joe, right, because I wanted a four, and so he started calling me Little Joe. And I was not answering him when he asked me my name. And, you know, people have also asked me about this. Some BPs like to be the life of the party and entertain everybody, and that's okay. But my take on it was to go in and try to be as low-key as possible and as forgettable as possible. And so I just didn't want to talk to anybody. And they said that I was demanding or something, or I was working the dealers hard. Well, I was working the dealers hard, which dealers don't like. But, you know, the game was such that the nature of the game, I would need to switch my odds from, you know, move them from the low numbers over to the high numbers, and two rolls later, move them off there and put them over here and that kind of stuff. So, you know, dealers don't like to work. But
just to guess, but having it written up in the New York Times Magazine might not be the best way to keep low profile.
Yes, that's true. But, the play actually happened over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, I'm completely retired, so.
Well, for the audience, if you're interested in this sort of thing, you really do need to read the article, because there is, as Bob just said earlier, there's more information divulged there that you wouldn't expect to see in an article like that, which I would call really sort of privileged information in terms of how certain people would operate in a situation like this. I thought it was quite amazing that so much was portrayed.
Yeah, and also rarely is a gambling situation portrayed so accurately. I should mention this fallout. I got a call today from a producer who does, you know, one of the Real Housewives show and things like that. Wanted to know if I'd be interested in doing a reality television show.
We could call you Little Joe.
Little Joe, yeah. And follow me around and gamble. I said, no, I would not be interested in that. And he said, what about James? I was like, no, I can guarantee you he also would not be interested in that. I don't think any top professional would be interested in that, because you're just killing their career. But, I mean, we did talk a little bit, and I said, you know, first of all, how would you sustain a show from week to week, where once the guy's been seen on TV, he's not going to be able to walk into a casino and play anywhere. But we did talk about it a little bit more, and you know, I said, you know, one thing that might work would be like training a card counting team. I mean, the other thing is nobody's going to want to reveal anything like what we did in Oklahoma on television, how it works. And a lot of top professionals are doing things that are not written about in books, that are not talked about on the internet, and they're not going to put them on TV. But everyone knows about card counting, so you could do a show where you have maybe some kind of a professional who trains a team, and the team goes out, and you could go to different locales every week. And
well, here's always been my experience when it comes to divulging information. For instance, in your situation, I'm pretty sure there were greener pastures, right? So it was okay to tell that story. There were greener pastures elsewhere, and it was okay to tell that story. The classic example for me was when Ian Anderson came to me to do a book called Burning the Tables in Las Vegas. And Ian had years ago done Turning the Tables in Las Vegas, which was about getting away with counting cards and playing like a professional by laying cover and camouflage. And Turning the Tables was a very influential book back then, you know, along with Beat the Dealer and I would say Ken Houston's book and various others, Revere's and others that came out. And when he came and brought me a revamped idea on how to do it using more sophisticated methods in Burning the Tables, I said to him, why do you want to tell all of this? He said, because I've already come up with better ways. Yeah. And he was very happy to do that. Now, it wasn't that they were outmoded and didn't work. He'd just come up with more, and he wasn't telling everything. And I think that a lot of that happens when things finally get disclosed, you know, to the general public.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the game in Oklahoma, you know, we knew it would not last. I mean, you know, you're going to win a certain amount of money, and then they're going to, even though they don't understand what's happening, they're just going to, well, you walk in and the table is closed. You know, they don't open the table anymore.
Yeah, was it in the article about card counter, or did you tell me that on the side?
You know, they did mention that in the article, because, yeah, what happened was I had bets on the 4 and the 5, and I said, move my bets from the 4 and the 5 to the 9 and the 10. And the next roll was hard 10. Mm-hmm. And the dealer sort of looked up and to the other dealers went, card counter. And, you know.
As if you could count that. I mean, you know, that's not what you were doing. But,
right. Yeah. As if you could count these, they had, you know, 12 cards that are being shuffled every hand, you know. But
they knew something was up.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Well, we knew that dealer was trouble, and he was trouble. He turned out to be trouble, and I ended up avoiding him, and players who came in after me avoided him.
And you lost to other dealers. Sorry, let's move on.
I always lose, Bob. That's what, you know.
That's it.
That's
why they
can't follow signals.
I was going to say, because
so
you can't
there's nothing
follow
to worry
signals.
About.
All right, then sounds like you'd be perfect for the reality show. You got no career to protect.
Right.
Okay. Couple, I hope if people know I'm joking. Okay. A couple of people in Missouri found a glitch in the player tracking system at the River City Casino in St. Louis. Apparently the couple just happened to download cash more than 4,000 times. And
they were busy.
And they ended up with an extra $300,000 that the casino didn't think they deserved. They were arrested for felony theft. The articles in the paper use words like stealing and criminals, and they didn't do anything to create the problem in the casino. I don't know if they're going to be convicted or not. Do you have any thoughts about this particular issue, Richard, Anthony?
Well, I'll just say that this is the best part of today's do-over, because when we discussed this on the show that will never be heard, I was waffling a little bit, and I was like, I think they may have crossed the line with what they did. Now, upon reflection, listening to your guys' side of it yesterday and thinking about it yesterday over a couple of beers afterwards, I'm really of the opinion that if it was discovered and the money can be retrieved, then that money needs to be given back. But I do not see anything illegal about what was being done. And my feeling is that I would side again with the player on this one, saying that the casinos have an obligation to protect their own games, discover their own glitches, and if somebody comes across something that they didn't make happen but found it, they have every right to exploit it. At the very least, I would say there should never be a felony charge attached to somebody for something like this.
Yeah, I agree with that. To me, the big takeaway is, you know, just because you're not doing anything wrong doesn't mean you may not get arrested. And, you know, you have to just be aware that that kind of stuff can happen. You know, downloading the free play 4,000 times, I don't know if that was sort of the best method of extracting it.
You know, it always, the way I try to resolve these things in my head, I go, would I do it? If I came across something like that, would I do it? And honestly, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do it because to me it feels wrong. It honestly does feel wrong. It feels it's too close to actual stealing than finding a machine that's overpaying on a certain hand or something like that. I don't know. It just feels
there's a
little bit of a gamble involved. You still got to get it. You know, you still got to run your money through. Things could go wrong. You know, they won't over time, but I mean, things could go wrong. This is sort of like just dipping and taking and taking. But just because I wouldn't do it doesn't make it illegal in my mind. I don't think it's illegal.
Yeah. I mean, whether it is or not, I have no idea. Whether it should be, obviously, I would side with the player. But
15 years ago, I was playing at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, and they had on a few 9-6 jacks or better machines, high denomination, some $100 machines, some were a $5 five play or $5 ten play, that was awarding slot club points at the slot machine level rather than the video poker level. I hammered those machines for a number of months, something like 70 hours a week for 2 or 3 months. Ended up with an extra $75,000 approximately worth of benefits, free play benefits, cash, and 4 automobiles. And they never asked for the money back.
Well, but that, to me, that's not even close to the same thing.
All right. How's it different?
In one case, they're just giving you free play. And in here, you earned the free play. You played to get that free play. Now, maybe they were paying at a different rate, but that's different than just having a, you know, reaching into the bucket and pulling out the money 4,000 times.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I agree. I think they are different. There are different degrees there, but there are different degrees of the same thing. And, you know, again, call us homers if you want. You know, we're on this show and we're going to say, yeah, the player was okay. But, again, to me, it always comes back to the establishment that makes the offer, that puts the game out. It's not our job to police them. You know, I mean, we got enough trouble. You know, or a regular gambler has enough trouble justifying what he does and being able to budget his money to lose, you know, whatever. He doesn't have to be worrying about whether the casino made a mistake or not.
And also, the fact that it's free play, to me, also is a consideration, right? Because if I went up to one of those where you put the ticket in and it spits the money out, and I went up to one of those and it just kept spitting out $20 bills, you know, without stopping, I'm not going to take that. I mean, you know what I mean? It just, that's different than them giving me free play. Now, maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe it should be, you know, they're both money, but, you know.
All right. Let's move on. Singapore. This group of guys, I think the one who were Croatian, I'm not sure, were using cell phones to photograph, take pictures of certain kinds of slot machines.
Videotape, right?
Yeah, videotape. Once it was, they took those videotapes, they sent it off to computer programmers in Russia who did some analysis, came back, may or may not have used a device to help them determine when that machine was going to hit. They were arrested. One of the guys has pled guilty, sentenced to 22 months in jail. What do you think is happening here?
I think this is really interesting. I mean, it's interesting to me that there are machines that are faulty there's some problem with the random number generator, and that they can crack the machine by watching tapes of the spins. You know, it makes me wonder how to go about doing something similar, but doing it legally. Well, I don't think it should be illegal to just videotape a slot machine. You know, if you're not playing it, you're just standing there videotaping a slot machine, I don't think that should be illegal. And we're going to have Bob Nersesian on, you know, within the next few weeks, and this is something I definitely want to talk to him about. But if you can crack it through analysis, well, then would it be possible to come back and play without having to use a device?
Well, I think what makes this one a little more murky, because I went back and read the account of it after you guys told me we were going to talk about it, and there's one passage in the story that says the guy who did it, name was Skubnik. So Scooby-Doo or Skubnik or something, but I mean, I guess they were Russians. Said proceeded to the casino at about X time using the information provided. He located the compromised machines and fraudulently used the device to gain an advantage while playing on five compromised machines and won X amount of money. So it sounds like, you know, it's not clear from the articles whether they were being apprehended or charged for doing the taping or for coming back and actually using a device while they were playing. If it was for the taping alone, that is that's troublesome and that's worrisome, because lots of people take pictures and tape events in casinos. They take pictures of jackpots. They take pictures of hands they want to analyze when they go back home. That could put them in harm's way. Doing something like this could set a pretty bad precedent. I don't see why note-taking of any sort should be illegal in a casino for any reason, regardless of what they're doing it for. You know, you take it out, you do your work, you come back without a device, and that should be hunky-dory as far as I'm concerned. I use devices in casinos all the time. When I'm doing research for the Las Vegas Advisor, I've got a tape recorder with me always. I'm always talking into my phone, not always about gambling, sometimes about the price of a shrimp cocktail. But I mean, you know, I'm using a device. I'm using a recording device. So this is worrisome if that's what they were being picked up for.
It's also really worrisome because I could easily see myself in a situation where I send my son or someone else out to a casino and I say, hey, if they have any of these must-hit-buy machines, videotape the machine, you know, see how much is being put in and how much the meter moves, you know, videotape that so that I could then later look at it and determine when that machine is going to be a profitable play, right? And I would be very afraid of overzealous casino security and surveillance, you know, arresting somebody for doing that, which to me should be completely legal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously. The other thing that's interesting is I talked to several casino people about this, and they all were aware of Russians using cell phones to videotape slot machines. They said they'd been watching this for a long time, and they're all worried about it. They didn't know what was going on, but they had all noticed it and were watching it.
See, to me, this is a missed opportunity then on the part of surveillance or the part of the casino decision makers. If they're aware that groups of Russians or whatever it may be are going around and doing something that is suspicious, you know, they can look at their machines and they can see, you know, they can verify that what they're doing is causing them to lose money. They can look at their historical, you know, hand analyses and their payout rates, their hold percentages and so forth. And now every time they see this group, if they're aware of them and they see a group or they see this kind of activity, well, that's somebody telling them there's something wrong. And, I mean, right. They can use that information to their advantage to go in and look at those machines and either fix them or pull them.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's like a free consultancy, if you ask me, especially since this is the first part of the play when they're doing the recording.
Right.
But there may not be anything wrong when they're doing it, and it's only later when they get whacked.
Well, but it tells them, what I was saying, what Richard said, it was interesting to me. I'd never heard that the people who are in the casinos knew that something along those lines were going down. So when they see that, they're going to know that there's something potentially wrong with the device that they're recording. I mean, you know, whatever that device is, a certain kind of slot machine, a certain who knows, video poker game, I don't know what.
A friend of mine has this full-sized cell phone, iPhone, whatever it is, Android something. It's big enough so that it hangs out of his shirt pocket. It has the cameras always facing out. It is unclear when he's walking whether he's actually recording anything or not. So it would be, he could use that just to walk through a casino, be recording anything he wanted, and be invisible because
no one has ever caught me. The guy you're talking about has never been stopped or asked.
Yeah, that's the same guy I'm talking about, yes.
But yeah, I've absolutely used my phone to record, to videotape things that way. You know, we take pictures of pit bosses and distribute them just the way they take pictures of us, right? And dealers and, you know, so, and other things.
And I also know that the videotaping goes on in the scouting process of professional players or advantage players who are looking for things, and it's just much easier, you know, when you take a picture of something or you've got a video of something, it's much easier to do comparison that way. And so there's a lot of it going on. It doesn't necessarily mean they've got a target either, you know. So it just seems odd that. Now, back when they didn't allow photographs in casinos, then that was a different story. They could say, hey, it's a rule, it's a law, we don't allow photographs. But that
changed. It was never a law.
Well, it was a rule, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was their house rule. Yeah. But they're allowed, under the law, to have a house rule that's enforceable. I mean, yeah. You know, they can ask you to leave, or, you know, whatever, if you're not following their house rules. Yeah. So it's, for all intents and purposes, somewhat it's a law.
Actually, I remember a case, maybe this was about, I'm going to say 10 years ago, might have been more, where there was a blogger who would take pictures of things in a casino and post things like, where am I, or what casino is this, or something. And he was in one of the casinos in northern Las Vegas, I don't remember which one, and yeah, he got backroomed by security because it wasn't a phone, he was using an actual camera. And I think he took a picture of something on the ceiling, some painting or something on the ceiling, and they backroomed him over it. Yeah. So I think he sued. I don't know whatever happened.
Trying to remember which position he would have to be in to do the phone in his breast pocket to get the picture on the ceiling.
No, that guy was just very obviously using a camera.
All right. Let's change subjects again. Last few weeks, Bonnie and I were cruising in the Caribbean thanks to promotions at Caesars, and one of the stops was Nassau, and I had arranged to go over to Atlantis and get a pass to go into the aquarium that's, I don't know, normally $120 a person, something like that, and it's a hell of an aquarium. The aquarium is significantly bigger and more impressive than the one at Mandalay Bay. And in exchange, I would be looking over their inventory and possibly working out a deal to come back and play at another time. A few years ago, I was there. They had $25 NSU deuces. This is a 99.7% machine with a relatively small amount of incentive. Perhaps some agreement could have been made so that it was interesting to me and interesting to them for me to come and play a million or two through the machines. When I was getting my passes to the aquarium, the host was mentioning I had stopped by there a number of times, and these were all cruise ship related. We had been on a cruise ship and stopped by there for whatever reason. Had not played, 100% had not played, 100% had not given my ID. But they knew when I'd been there, and they were correct in when I had been there. My thought is they use eye recognition or
facial
recognition software, whether it's Biometrica or something. And so now as a video poker player, where at least in the United States you get W2Gs for a certain level of jackpots, I don't worry a lot about facial recognition software because casinos I play at know my name. But I was surprised that they gave me these dates. So I think they have effective facial recognition software at the Atlantis in Paradise Island next to Nassau.
So I disagree entirely. I don't believe that was facial recognition. I believe what happens is anytime a cruise who has comped big players on it docks, I think they send over a list of all of their big players that are on the cruise. And the Atlantis knows, oh, these guys are good players if they come in here. And so they would have gotten your name each time, and it would have been logged, and, oh, he was here, but he didn't play. I think that's far more likely than you just wandering in and them... that would be quite an elaborate process to identify everybody and log them in, and, that wouldn't be something automated. Somebody would have to log all that.
And I think that it could be a third thing. All right. I think both of your ideas are plausible, but I have an easier explanation, and it's based on something that honestly happened to me a little over maybe 12, 13 years ago. And by then I was not, I was pretty well known, and I'd already stopped playing and more publishing, but I was still considered by the casinos to be, active and armed and dangerous. And I just so happened at the time to be dating a girl who was one of the few female casino managers up to that time, and she was at Green Valley Ranch. And I was to pick her up, and I walked through the door, and about 5 minutes after I got in, my phone rang, and it was her saying, "You're here." And I said, "Yeah, how'd you know? She said, "Well, about 3 minutes." She goes, "You come in 5 minutes ago?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Well, about 4 minutes ago, my phone started lighting up like a Christmas tree." And I said, from what? And she's like, "From surveillance, telling me that Anthony Curtis was on the property." And she said, "I asked them, what was he doing? And they said he was walking around." But she said,
"That sounds suspicious."
Looking for beer.
yeah. He was at the bar getting a Heineken, But she says, "Wow." She says, "It's amazing." She goes, "I was getting call after call." And she said, "I even told him, just relax. He's here for something else, But that's how quickly. And I asked her later, what was it? Was it facial recognition? Was it, somebody recognized me? She goes, "You were recognized from the eye." She goes, "They saw you in the eye, from the eye, excuse me." And that was big news. And all of a sudden, there was something for them to do. And I think that you're a very well-known player. And I think that could have just been it, recognition from the eye in the sky.
Well, I... like to tell Bonnie and everybody else, I've never dated anybody at the Atlantis in the Bahamas. So I don't think that happened. But it could be. I have never played there. Never. There could be people who worked at Vegas casinos who would recognize me. But I've never played there. So, oh, well.
It was something. They knew you were there.
Yeah, they knew I was there. That much we're in agreement about. All right, we're going to have a few commercials, and then we're going to talk to Anthony about two separate ways in which sports betting has been in the gambling news in the past few weeks. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. July, they're giving away $600,000 in casino-wide progressives. The big progressive starts at $10,000 and must be hit by $25,000. Every player actively playing when the jackpot goes off receives $25 in free play. A second progressive begins at $1,000 and must be hit by $2,500. This is estimated to be hit three times a day. The new semester of free video poker classes will begin Wednesday, August 10th, and go through early October. This time they'll be held in the Silverado Lounge, which is as soon as you enter the casino from the parking garage. At the Palms, from now until July 28th, they have drawings every Saturday night at 7:15 p.m. Must be present to win. 20 winners share $10,000 each night. Every day between Monday and Friday, you can swipe and receive 20 free drawing tickets. PFP, play for prizes Monday through Friday. From July 4th through the 15th, you earn Walgreens gift cards. From July 18th through the 29th, you earn cash. Prizes are redeemed at a rate of 0.2% for video poker players, up to $190 per day, and you keep the points. Every Sunday in July, you earn double points on video poker and 10 times points on reels and video reels. Wednesdays, 500 points earned you a free car wash. Thursdays, the same number of points earned you a free Brendan movie ticket. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. They updated the site in June, giving gold members even more benefits. If you aren't gold, you can sign up for a free 7-day trial. Check it out. The game of the week is 100 Play Quick Quads. Quick Quads is a 6 coins per line game where you get extra 4 of a kinds, quads, by ending up with a 3 of a kind and the other 2 cards add up to the rank of the trips, such as 99963 or 444 deuce deuce. It is a fun game. Of the games that I would play, pay schedules or percentage return the same, Quick Quads is at the top of my personal list insofar as most interesting to play. All right. It's been a couple totally different things about sports betting in the news fairly recently. The first one was an article published in Deadspin that is basically a hatchet job against RJ Bell and his organization, pregame.com. Anthony, did you see that article?
Absolutely. I mean, the minute that article came out, some 2 or 3 people sent it to me. I do a fair amount of sports betting myself these days. Sports betting is one of the things you can do when you're no longer allowed to do other things. And, you know, still get an edge. There's a few games you can get an edge at, and sports betting is one of them. So I'm fairly active in sports betting circles, and some of my buddies sent me the article. It was a gigantic article. I mean, it was big type, but 45 pages printed out. And apparently this the author, I what was his name, Skolnick or something like that?
It was Ryan Goldberg.
Was it? Okay, yeah, that sounds right. Okay, sorry about that. But anyway, apparently, this guy had an axe to grind, and he really wanted to take pregame to task for selling picks that weren't good enough to win. And he had a lot of data, and that data seemed to show that most of the pregame touts, and there are touts, that's what they are, were negative in terms of the information they gave out, and the few that were positive. One of them being Fezzik, who's a popular name, a friend of mine. I've worked with Fezzik for a long time, but he's now working at pregame. Fezzik was positive, but not positive after fees. So, you know, the story was that RJ Bell and pregame.com present themselves as like super quants who really understand this business, and they're really nothing but, you know, dart throwers, perhaps, or maybe better than dart throwing, but not good enough to overcome fees. And it created quite a stir. A lot of people saw it as a reckoning, and that, you know, saying that RJ had just been so much on TV, so much on the radio, so much press, so much validation by the media, and it was about time that somebody, you know, shined a light. Now there's pushback. Pregame is fighting back, and they've hired an attorney, and you know, we'll see where that goes. And not just an attorney, it was the attorney who represented and won for Hulk Hogan in his Gawker case. So it's going to get interesting.
Yeah, there's sort of a Twitter war going on now where pregame will put something out, make a claim, and immediately they'll kind of jump in and show the data and say, no, you know, wrong again. I contacted, I believe his name was Ryan Goldberg, I'd have to check, but I contacted him. I wanted to try to get him on the show very badly. He said he was too busy, but he put me in touch with the two guys who did the data for him. One of them is a professor at the University of Chicago. he did not want to get into sort of a public battle with anybody, so he declined. But he also apparently is a baseball bettor and has a model that he uses to bet baseball. And he did say he might be interested in coming on the show in the future to talk about that. So that would be good. But
yeah, these guys, the guys that helped the author, and I think you're correct in the name Goldberg, right? They seem like the real McCoy from everything that I've read. I don't know them and I didn't look into it, but just from what I read in that article, it sounds like they're pros and they do their stuff. And I've just known, I mean, for a long time, there have been guys that the whole RJ Bell model has kind of stuck in their craw because RJ's just gotten, the media has just fallen in love with him. And he's very good. He's very good.
He's very good radio personality.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He talks very officiously. He knows his stuff. He does know his stuff to a degree. Does that mean he can beat it? A lot more goes into beating sports than understanding sports and understanding statistics and being able to spew them out on demand. And I've talked on both sides of the window, both the players who are very good and a lot of the bookmakers who just feel that there's a little bit too much RJ Bell out there, almost like when DFS went too crazy with too many ads on TV. It's just like he pushed it a little bit too far, and somebody finally went after him.
This article came out when I was on vacation, so I skimmed it, and I did not read it carefully. If I'm a sports bettor, and I'm betting $100 a game, or if I'm betting $1,000 a game, the fee I would pay to get picks would be the same. But it's possible that the picks wouldn't be positive if you were betting $100 a game, but they would be if you were betting $1,000 a game. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Assuming they were positive to start with.
That's a really great point. Yes, because typically what you pay is a static amount because they don't know how much you're going to bet. You know, they're going to give you the number. And certainly $25 on a $100 bet is a much bigger chunk than $25 on a $1,000 bet. All right, so if you look at the $100 bet and you look at a guy with or without tout, it's very difficult for him to overcome the bookie's edge using the tout. A much bigger bettor can do better. But they also there's a level of their handicappers. So a guy like Fezzik you pay a lot more for. You know, theoretically, if you want the better, you pay more. You pay a higher amount. And only people who would be making $1,000 bets or $500 bets are going to pay the fee that they have to pay for those picks. So there's a little bit of that sort of adjustment that goes on as well.
But if they determine that Fezzik was negative after the fees, they have to determine, is this figured on the fees, or assuming you're $100 better or $1,000 better? And I don't know, does the article get into that discussion?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, it didn't break it all down, but I'm pretty sure that, to be honest with you, that's a really good question. I mean, I should have looked at the charts a little harder and I could have answered that definitively, but I'm pretty sure that they did take into account what their specific fees were in terms, you know, they must have done some sort of normalization there. I'm almost certain that they did.
But the vast majority of the touts were not breaking even before the fees. So
it was 90% of them were, which is almost seems almost impossible. But I mean, you know, that they could be that average. But I mean, yeah, 90% of them were below, just couldn't win at the percentage necessary. Was 52.3? Is it, you know, to beat the vig, the 10%.
All right. Also, in the general area of sports betting, there's some talk recently about entity betting. So what is this all about, and what's the news all about?
You want that one, Richard? You want me to talk?
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I've watched this one really closely because this one, just like a lot of my buddies really have a thing for touts, I kind of got a thing for this. This thing bugs me because, in my opinion, you know, this is another thing that the media has jumped on, and they're just eating this up with a spoon, like it's going to be some sort of incredible boon for the sports betting, you know, for sports books in Nevada. And what it is essentially they're allowing people or groups or entities to hang out a shingle that says, you know, we are professionals, and we're going to allow you to buy into us as you would with a hedge fund or something like that. So they're basically, they're selling picks in a format that makes them look like a more legitimized, like a financial hedge fund. There was a big deal about legalization. It had to go through gaming control. Could this be allowed? Would this be allowed to be done? Finally, they said, yes, you can do that. You've got to get a license of some sort, and then you become a valid hedge fund operator of a sports betting entity in Nevada. Now, here's a big problem with that. You know, I know a little bit about what it takes to win, and it takes a lot. It takes handicapping often. It takes being able to manipulate numbers and work with different bookies, and it takes having lots of what we call outs. It means you have to be able to go to different sports books and put yourself in positions based on line disparities and put yourself in spots where you can later come back and capitalize. And that requires part of the skill of being a winning sports bettor for most is having lots and lots of outs. Well, in this situation, you can only bet, the entity can only bet at sports books that have been approved or have agreed to take the entity's bets. And at this time, where there are a bunch of entities out there taking wagers or taking investment, there is only one sports book that is taking the entity's bets, at least as of the last I knew, as of last week, and that is the former Cantor Gaming, which is now known by CG Technologies. And all I'm saying is that you simply cannot bet into a singular line with no other options over any period of time and beat the VIG. I just don't think it can be done except in very, very rare situations.
And if you are, Cantor isn't going to take the bets. I mean, that's the other thing that's ridiculous. I mean, if you had a big fund where you wanted to bet a lot of money, Cantor is just not going to take it. And the other thing is, the fund has to supply the name of every person involved in the fund, every investor. And, you know, as soon as they see the name of a guy who's actually sharp, they're just going to refuse the bets anyway.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, when you guys put this up on the internet and people listen to this show, and they want to disagree with me that someone can beat the Lions, and they go to gamblingwithanedge.com and they attack me there and tell me that it can't be done, I will step back and say, yes, there are probably handicappers that could bet into a line, selectively choosing the times they beat the bookie, but you're right. If they beat them enough times, they're going to say, okay, you're one of the few. We've had enough. You know, we throw in the towel. And that's why it just simply can't work.
Right. Yeah.
It's another form, it's another way to run a tout service. You know, it's a tout in hedge funds clothing is essentially what it boils down to.
Well, and get paid more than what the tout would get paid.
Well, yeah, from what I'm seeing, yeah.
The fees are much bigger than what the tout gets.
Yeah, what I've seen some variance in that, but what seems to be the sweet spot seems to be about 30%. So, I mean, you're only going to, your manager of the entity is going to take 30% out. And then it becomes really interesting to see when they're going to take that out. I would assume that they would take it out of you when you leave the fund. But if they're doing some other foolishness, you know, where they're saying, okay, every week we're going to settle, then that's another problem. That's something else people have to look at.
Oh, that would be awful. You
that
can't
would be
beat
very
that.
Terrible. Yes, it would.
All right. We've been talking to Anthony Curtis. Richard, who is Mitch Towner, and why are we having him on the show next week?
So Mitch is a former Magic the Gathering player who I reviewed a book called Johnny Magic and the Card Shark
Kids.
That's
John Finkel. He was on our show.
Yes, exactly, John Finkel. So he was one of these Magic players that went on to do well at poker. And so Mitch, being a former Magic player, decided to come to town and give the World Series a try and won the Colossus, was it?
I don't think it was the Colossus, but it was a deep stack tournament with a $1,500 entry fee.
Was it the Millionaire Maker?
Well, it was. His prize was $1.2 million. So,
oh, okay, no, I don't think that was.
Yeah,
it might have been
anyway,
Colossus. Yeah,
we'll find out. We'll find out next week what it was he won. I didn't know you were going to ask me that question, so I didn't do my research before we got here. I think he's also a top bridge player, but. Yeah, we'll find out more about that. And you know what? I will do my research before we talk to him, and I will put it at gamblingwithanedge.com as the upcoming guest. And then if people want to ask him questions, you know, they can send him our way.
All right. So thank you, Anthony. And despite your fears that today wouldn't be close to what yesterday's was. I actually think it went better. So thank you very much for allowing us to repeat. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.